Hello, everybody, and welcome to 3-Point Perspective, the podcast about illustration, how to do it, how to make a living at it, and how to make an impact in the world with your art. I'm Jake Parker.
I'm Lee White.
And I'm Will Terry. All three of us are professional illustrators, and we've all been working for about the last 25 years. We work with just about every major publisher and publication in the business. Together, we've published about 100 books, and we've all taught illustration at universities.
Each week, we're going to come at you guys with a different topic. Sometimes we're going to agree. Sometimes we're going to argue. But every time, you are going to leave amazed and bedazzled.
All right. We knocked that one out. This is so good.
We should just record that. I mean, like, it is recorded. Just like clip it and then just use it every time.
No, I like how there's subtle differences between each one. But if you're listening to this and you're a longtime listener, meaning you've been around for the last year and a half, you might be excited to know that this is our 40th episode. You've listened to 40 of these.
40 episodes.
Of these hot mess podcast episodes.
That's 40 hours. That's a full work week of just us yammering about random
That's
stuff.
True. That's true. But we really appreciate, we get emails, we get comments on Twitter, we get people sharing it, and just like every once in a while there'll be like an Instagram story. Someone says, check out this podcast. We love it. We just appreciate the good feedback that we get. Sometimes we get like constructive criticism, and that's also welcomed. We're always looking at ways to make this podcast better. So, quick update on everybody. It's actually been several weeks since we've last recorded. We had a buffer there because we knew there'd be some like busy times going on here for us. So we kind of had a queue of episodes waiting, and now we're through that queue. So this is like the closest to air date that I think we've ever recorded a podcast.
We're paving the highway and driving on it right behind it.
Yeah, we're dropping those train tracks right in front of us. Yeah. But let's just have a quick update on where you guys are at with everything and what you're doing. So Will, tell us, how's life?
Life's good. Life's really good.
Okay.
anything new?
Yeah, there's new stuff that I don't really want to share right now, but there's
career wise. Let's talk about your career. Yeah.
There's
yeah, nobody cares about your personal life. Just tell us what you're drawing.
Definitely working on doing the Inktober project, working on another project that I can't talk about right now.
Now is your Inktober totally done and you're just like posting these things daily? You're not drawing anymore for Inktober, are you?
No, yeah. I am. I'm working on the last few right now. Mm-hmm. And then the other project I'll be able to talk about pretty soon. I'll be, we're doing something that we're marketing on our own, and then, working on my own book. I have my book that I'm going to be, launching on Kickstarter is being edited right now. I will launch that in, I'm not going to give the title of it yet, but that one is launching in February.
Great. Yeah. And you got everything you needed from everyone for that?
I am missing something from you and Liz.
No, I sent mine.
Did you?
Yes, I sure did.
Okay.
Don't. And I sent mine. Yeah, I sent mine too.
I did send mine for real. You check your email. I still got it here if you need it again, but I did send mine.
Okay, I'll look for it.
I personally am excited for this project. I know a little bit about it. I can't wait for you to talk about it. We should probably devote an episode to it because I think there's enough to talk about it there. If you're up for that.
Will be. Absolutely. Maybe a good time for that would be right around the launch.
Okay. Let's plan that. All right, Lee, what's up with you?
I am on my last illustration for the book that I've been working on over the summer. And it's good. I love the illustrations. This has been a really fun one to work on. But today is the last day, and it is the whole book has been a true Will Terry draw 100 things. Every page is more detailed than I typically do in this last page. It's an interior of a kid's room, and it's just everything. All the whole book basically comes into this kid's room. And so I'm drawing all this little stuff. And every time I have to draw a new thing, I'm like, what would Will Terry do? And I'm getting ready to sign another contract for a new book that I'm very excited about. And once I actually ink that, I will talk about it next time.
All right. Your time's up there. You went over a little bit. So,
yeah. Did you guys hear that alarm?
Yeah, we did.
Okay. I didn't know if that was just in my headphones or whatever. That is my Taskmaster. I have 8 of those every day, and I've got 1 hour to complete a very specific thing, and that goes off every hour. And I know either I hit it or I didn't.
So wait, let me get this straight. You had a full-time gig and you fired your boss. So you could be your own boss, and then you got an electronic taskmaster.
Yeah, it yells at me if it beeps like that. And I'm not done with what I. It gives me a small electric shock.
Wow.
Well, I have seen a handful of illustrations from this book you're working on, and I got to say, it's probably my most favorite thing that you've done so far.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
It's really nice.
So I can't wait to see the final product. I hope you send me a PDF or something of it, because I want to check it out.
I'll send it tomorrow. Should be completely done.
All right. Yeah. Awesome. Okay. For me, I am simultaneously handling the Inktober Challenge. That means posting every day Inktober spotlights on the challenge. That means working with the sponsors to make sure that they're getting what they need posted out there so that they feel like they're getting their money's worth. And I'm also doing the Inktober Challenge on my own. So that means doing a drawing every day. And I'm finishing up the Inktober Handbook, which will be coming out next year if I meet all my deadlines. but I still have a handful of illustrations to do for that. This is my illustration checklist. If you're on the video, you can see I just have to knock out those before the end of the month. So
that's a lot of things on there.
It is a lot of things, but they're not a lot of big things. So
he puts things like eat a snack on there.
No.
Okay.
No. Some of them are you know, they're all ink drawings, but some of them are like, a page of like stroke marks that I have to draw. You know, it's not like sitting down and doing a drawing. But the Inktober book is going to be really cool. It's like part of my philosophy on art. It's a lot of like my YouTube videos in essay form in a book, but then it's also like how I ink. So it's kind of my inking class at SVS, which is also that's like a simplified version of that in book form. And then the book actually has its own prompt list in it. So it's a prompt list that's outside of the Inktober Challenge. So you could get this book in February and do your own prompt list, you know, use that prompt list and do your own Inktober Challenge in February if you wanted to. So the idea is that you don't have to wait until October to do Inktober as well. So
cool.
That's what I'm doing. And this episode is airing on the end of Inktober. So if anybody got this far doing Inktober, I just want to high five you through your iPod software. Here it is. There's the high five. Good job. I'll also pat you on the back. There you go.
So supportive.
Yeah. I like that you're doing that task manager thing, like reminder thing. Mm-hmm. This morning, I actually just read a cool quote from Ingvar Kamprado. Kamprad, I think that's how you pronounce his name. He is most notable for creating or founding IKEA. I don't know if you've ever heard of that. It's a furniture store. Okay. You might have heard of it. I don't know. Anyways, this is what he says. You could do so much in 10 minutes time. 10 minutes, once gone, are gone for good. Divide your life into 10-minute units and sacrifice as few of them as possible in meaningless activity. So that's like his trick to being productive. So I don't know. That's the thing I'm thinking about. It's like, yeah, that's true. 10 minutes can come and go so easily. And if you look back at the last 10 minutes, was it productive or was it wasted?
Ours was definitely wasted. Sorry. So easy.
Something to think about. All right, let's get down to business on this episode. This is Will's episode, so I'm turning the time over to you, Will. Take it away, and let's have it.
I think we're in for a treat on this one. This episode is all about illustration horror stories, but instead of our horror stories, these are horror stories from you guys, from listeners, and from friends and illustration people in general. So what we're going to do is I look at it like this is our time to be Beavis and Butthead, where we watch, you know, we listen to the, you know, how they would watch TV and make comments.
So we get to make fun of people's misery. Is that what?
Something that like we're doing? That, where we're just,
or empathize with them,
or empathize, whatever. Maybe that's not the best analogy.
I wish I had a good Beavis Butthead laugh. Some people can, you know, imitate that. I can't do it, but I wish I could.
I honestly haven't watched Beavis and Butthead since the last century, since the 90s. I haven't sat down and seen really even a clip of that stuff. Mm. All right.
Okay, so I put this out on social media, and I asked people that listen to our podcast to weigh in and give us, you know, the worst stories they've had, the worst experiences they've had. Freelancing. And so, and I got a ton, way too many. I got emails and I got a lot on Facebook. And basically I'm going to read some of the ones that I think would be easier to get through. Some were really long and I really appreciate the time that they went into those, but it would be really hard for me to convey the super, super, like I'm talking pages and pages of story in this podcast. So I'm kind of going for the shorter ones. But I'm going to start with Allie Douglas Beruder, and I hope I'm not butchering that last name. And I want to just get your take on these, and we'll kind of just comment on them. So I'm going to read this one. Signed a book contract with dates confirming when they would give me the info and dates I would deliver. They sent, and this is talking about the publisher, sent all the info, copy, et cetera, a few weeks late and postponed talking to me about ideas even further. But I still had to deliver on their deadlines. Basically did all the sketches in a week, which was fine, but a nightmare to fit around my teaching schedule, which I told them up front. I had to work this, blah, blah, blah. Then they completely wasted the next month delaying feedback on revisions. Sound familiar? Seemed like I had a good 3 to 4 months in the contract for the job, which was just a 14-page elementary school book. But did have a full page illos and spreads, so not a ton of work. But with the ridiculous amount of revisions, I did end up doing a ton of work and did it all in a really short amount of time. And I'm assuming did it really short to be able to preserve the time to do the finishes. And then they wasted even more time getting back. And then it was almost impossible. Let's see, they gave me another. So anyway, the gist of this story is,
wait, was this one of the books or is this the short ones?
It was a book. It was a 14-page
okay.
I think a book. But basically the idea is, what do you do when your publisher wastes all the time that they gave you when you upfront negotiated the contract?
That's a good question. I am in favor now, and I haven't got this going yet, but I'm talking to my agent about it, that I would like all my dates to be, not the only date that is a hard date is the day that I turn in the sketches, and every other date after that is linked to when they get me feedback.
Mm. Mm.
I mean, that makes total sense, right?
Yep.
I'll work on the revisions for 2 months after I get them back. You know, the finishes will take this long after I get their notes back, because it's a problem that everybody runs into. It drives me crazy that their lack of urgency can be so kind of, you know, extensive, and then your deadline stays the same. It makes absolutely no sense.
Yeah, I think that's something definitely.
That.
What's that?
I'm trying to think of a good analogy. It'd be like someone, you give someone a ride, and they're like, let me fill up your gas tank for giving me a ride to the airport, and then when they come back in town, they want to use your gas to have them, the gas they put in your car, to drive them all over the place again or something.
Or it's like, give me a ride to the airport And then they get mad at you for making them late because they stopped to fill up your tank and they say, oh, I gotta go get a breakfast really quick. So we're going to get breakfast.
Right.
Why'd you make me late to the airport? I think Lee's right though. The solution to this or the preventative measure for this is at the outset, just be very clear and say, okay, as far as the schedule is concerned, I'm going to, I'll have sketches to you by this date. That's a hard deadline. But after that, every date is based on feedback. I think the other thing too is I don't remember quite the details of the story, but if were they getting upset with her or she just hustled?
They made her hold to the deadline no matter what. It was like, nope, this is hard and fast.
Well, the question I have is, I mean, some people think that they need to stick to that original deadline, but a lot of times, and I was guilty of this too earlier in my career, I didn't know that I could just say, hey, you guys took so long. I can't do it in that time. When can we do it? And the book that I'm working on right now was supposed to be done almost a year ago, but circumstances happened. And every time something happened on their side, I'd say, I can't do it in that time. Going to have to move it back to this time where we can do it. And they'd never had a problem with it.
Same thing happened to me with the sequel to Bonaparte. And they were fine with it because they knew that they had another theme that's going to run through a lot of our comments, I think, is the better or the higher end the client, the less of these problems you'll have.
Very true.
And the lower the client, the more of these problems you're going to have. It's interesting that, and I love social media because of what it's done for our communication, but right under this on Facebook, on this story, a woman named Lisa Vega weighed in, and she was an art director that I had when I worked on a Simon Schuster book series, the Ant Hill series, way back, over a decade ago. And so it's kind of fun to see. She's on my friends list, but she says to Allie, she says, why did you have to keep the dates if they didn't? That's unreasonable. If things are slow on my end, I always bump out the dates or pay more money. Next time, stipulate in the contract how much time you need between stages and dates and basically saying everything that we just said.
Yep.
So
I actually had a contract I did for a client once where I knew they were serious because the contract said, okay, here's how much we're going to pay you. And then if you miss the deadline by 2 weeks, we're going to cut that pay in half. And if you miss it by, a month, then we're going to cut that pay by 3/4. Mm-hmm. And then if you miss it by this, we're just not going to pay you. And so I knew up front and they were really good about getting back on notes and stuff, but I knew that like that deadlines were a serious thing for them.
Yeah. It'd be nice if that also worked in reverse. Like if they held it up, well, now your fee doubles,
For real. Okay, what's the next one?
Your fantasies. Okay, the next one is from Shane Alexander Hunt, and he's actually someone that is going to be teaching a class for us. But he says
he sounds familiar.
Yeah, he says I offered to do a traditionally animated piece for somebody, despite my minimal experience. I had a degree in animation, so I figured I could probably just figure it out. After several rounds of her rejecting my work, I gave up and walked away with my tail between my legs. The client was also pretty upset with me. I learned that confidence and a can-do attitude really can only just get you so far. Now I am a lot more careful to make sure the job is reasonably within my skill set. And I thought this was a very humble thing for him to put out there. Cause it's, most of the stories are where the client went wrong. This is where he's basically saying, I wasn't ready for this job.
That's a good point too. It's like, I always have this like growth mindset thing, like, okay, say yes to everything and figure it out, and you'll be able to solve it. But this is sort of a warning that like there are limitations to what you're able to accomplish. But I know Lee, that's the name of your career. Like that's the thing that you've been doing. Like for the last 20 years, right?
It is. But you guys have only heard the times where it worked out. I mean, it flops a lot. I just botch it. But I think that stuff's kind of funny too. I don't know. I don't mind being it where I'm over my head and I'm messing up. But when I'm getting that spot, I'm the first one to say, man, this is terrible. Let me out of here.
Right. I mean, devil's advocate to me says, he learned a lot in doing this, and you learn right. We learn a lot from our failures. And so is it good to mess up a client? No. Is it going to ruin his career to have a bad experience with a client? No. You know, and maybe what he learned from this is even more valuable than, mm-hmm. I don't know.
Also, I wouldn't worry about, I mean, one client, one thing like that. Like, that isn't, you know, on the spectrum of ways to mess up a job, like, I think that one's almost on the acceptable end. It's not like, the worst is, like, just not delivering because you're lazy or you took on too much and you gave them subpar stuff. I think this one you could kind of chalk it up to like a little bit of inexperience and knowing that moving forward, you know, not to say yes to that, or you know exactly what kind of qualities you need to gain and skills you need to build before you do a job like that. So learning experience.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Next one. Raymond Moore. I had an old friend contact me on Facebook asking if I could design a logo for his podcast intro. I'm glad this wasn't us. I told him I would work on a rough sketch and get back with him soon. When I got back with him after a week or so, he said he decided, oh, you know, I'm not going to go with the logo. I asked, don't you think it would have been nice to have contacted me and let me know that that's what you were thinking since I was working on a sketch for you? His response was, I don't see what the big deal is. All you're doing is drawing.
Ooh.
Ouch.
Okay. That's right there. That's a red flag. You need to eliminate those people from your life.
There are contract killers that you can hire as well. So there's a real difference between working for, you know, companies that hire illustrators all the time and that are doing high end work versus, you know, a friend or a guy or someone that, you know, or, one red flag that I'll just talk about right now is if someone turns down a job for an illustration and the client says something like, do you know anyone? Or maybe the job is coming to you from a friend who turned it down. And they're saying, yeah, they're just looking for an artist. Do you want to do it? That's a huge red flag because in the business of illustration, no one who knows what they're doing will fit any illustrator into any job, right? Because it's all based on style and are you the appropriate illustrator for the job. So a huge red flag is someone else said they can't do it, but they're asking if you can and they haven't seen your work.
Right.
Don't. It's just not going to work out almost never.
The only thing I would do in this situation or these kinds of situations is I would say, yeah, I'd love to do your podcast illustration. You don't even have to like set, you know, figure out if it's a friend or whatever. You just set an arbitrary amount. Like it'll be $50 or it'll be $100. And I just need half up front.
Yeah.
Okay.
Half up front.
Thing. And so, that way, if they change, first off, if they've already paid $50 or $100 or something up front, they're probably going to commit to this.
Yeah.
But even if they change their mind, then they've really made that decision to change their mind and you've made at least half the money.
Yeah. That's actually the best advice. And what I was going to say next is because if I in early on, when I first started illustration, it's like people that were starting businesses started coming out of the woodworks and asking me to do a logo. And I soon realized that the easiest thing to do when you start a business is to find some sucker friend artist and ask him to start drawing for you. Like you don't have to do any work to just say, I need a logo. Can you get going on that? Meanwhile, they haven't done anything to start this business. It was more of just a thought they woke up with that morning. Meanwhile, you're working on a logo for them. They've forgotten about. So make them pay up front. And that really, you know, they're going to they're going to either decide to do it or not.
Have you guys done a bunch of logos when you're first starting out?
Yes.
Yeah, I've done that stuff. Yeah.
That's
good. Yourself?
I hated it so quickly from the start that I think I did like one or two, and then I just said, I'm not doing. There was a couple requests. It was the logo request, then also the people asking me to draw tattoos. Do you guys get that?
I've had that too. Yeah.
Oh my goodness. I did one of them, and it took me like, 40 hours to get this thing right. And there was revisions and stuff. And my trade-off for that was this guy was managing a restaurant and I was going to get to eat there for free. So he didn't have to do anything other than just say, yeah, comp that guy's meal. Meanwhile, I put in like 40 hours on this tattoo. I said, there's no chance I'll do a logo or tattoo anymore.
Yeah. But that, I mean, if it's a good restaurant, that's a good trade-off.
No, it's not. Even, I mean, think about it. A good restaurant, even at, say, I take my wife, that would be like, what, $200 meal. So I worked for 40 hours for $200.
Oh, it was one meal?
One meal.
Trade? Yeah. Oh, no. I thought it was like, you get a free pass.
Oh, no. If it was
clients,
if it was,
there.
Yeah, no, no. You could, like... It was one meal, and it was a good meal, but oh my gosh, it was, I just got so ripped off because I just didn't. You know, they just think I'm giving you something, you're giving me something. It's an equal trade. But most of the time, people are not actually having to create something new in the trade, whereas we are.
Right.
Just be careful of that stuff. The tattoos and the logos, man. People got to pay big bucks for that.
Yeah. Again, it's just make sure. I mean, just make sure you make that deal like half up front and half when I deliver. That way I'm protected and you're protected, right? You don't, you're not out a bunch of money. I'm not out a bunch of time.
Yeah. True. Can I add one little anecdote to this story? It's kind of funny.
Please do.
So I did the logo that I did was this, it was very much based on this guy was doing yoga and Zen kind of thing. And so there's this kind of, I don't even know what the symbol is, like this Buddhist kind of symbol and Zen, lotus flower kind of thing. So very, very peaceful, very new agey, almost kind of tattoo design. And so he got it on his arm. He's now in prison. And I think about how that, I think about how that tattoo looks in prison in just such a different, juxtaposition of the environment versus this tattoo. Yep, fraud. He's one of those mortgage people that took a bunch of money, people, and he ended up in the clink.
Whoa!
Oh boy! Oh boy! All right. Okay, what's the next one?
From Guy Kidd. I had an indie comic company reach out to me saying they wanted to break into the children's book market, and asked if I wanted to do the illustrations for their first book in that space. I gladly gave my rate. They agreed to do it. Asked for a sample before sending me the contract. I obliged with a sample sketch that they loved. They sent me the script and said there wasn't really a deadline. Just as soon as I could, when I mentioned the contract, they said they would send it over. I waited for a bit and got back in touch and was told the contract would be coming soon. I thanked them and let them know that I will be starting drawing once I get the contract. After a few months of no contract, I made a comment on their Instagram story where they were asking for artists for a comic project they had, and they responded with, "Aren't you already doing something for us?" To which I said, it was planned, but I still haven't received the contract. And since then, it's been radio silent, and I have yet to see any foray into the children's book market. They're still pushing their comics at every convention they can get in through. I wish them well, but a bit choppy.
Yep. Yeah. Sounds like they're amateurs. Mm-hmm. It's amateur night in Dixie. Yep. That's what my agent always says when I come up with an idea, and she's like, that's not good enough. I wouldn't spend another minute worrying about those guys, and you did the right thing. I'll start working once there's a contract and just move on. And once you get that contract, the other thing though is, it depends on how well you know the people and how well you trust the people too. Cause I've sometimes have done stuff where we figured out the contract and everything after the job was done. Mm-hmm. Right. Like I trusted them, they trusted me, we worked on it. And then everything got in the right order and I got paid and they got their work.
God, that makes me nervous.
But yes, that's
nerve-wracking.
I don't. That's not my mode of operations normally. So, I think feel it out and but for the most part, you did the right thing.
I've had big publishers where I've started working before the contract is in, based on the emails back and forth, figuring that. And Lee, you can tell me if you hate this or not, but I'm talking like, we're talking one of the big five publishers, three or four times where they're like, look, the contract is coming. And let's say I have, 9 months to work on it or 6 months to work on it. And my personality is I want to get going because I've got other work to work on and I want to leave room for other work, and I could wait a month or two for the contract and still have time to finish the book. But because I want to juggle things and be able to have more time to do more work, I often get going on it. Just knowing that it's in the works, it's different.
Well, if it's a big five and it's a reputable company, I mean, there's still no guarantee of payment, but I would say it's at least a better odds than if it's somebody you never heard of, you're going to want to get something up front.
Right.
And I will add that if it's foreign, no matter where it is, get something up front. It is a lot harder to get paid from somebody in a different country.
How are you going to take them to court?
Yeah, there's no, literally just not. Getting a plane flight over there to even start negotiations is probably going to cost more than you were actually contracted to get, which is what happened with me and a company in England. So I just sort of had to write it off. I eventually did get paid after harassing them. I had a little reminder that every week I was going to harass them. And that was just became part of my life. I was getting no responses back. A little window into how I think. You guys do not want to get on my bad side because I take such joy in sending those emails after a while. Anyway, I got paid. Probably just I was overwhelming their server or something.
Wow.
Like they're having meetings about you. Like, how much longer can this go on?
It's not pretty.
Yeah. It's funny.
Okay, next. Alicia Call, one of my former students at UVU, and she does these really, really nice paintings. Excuse me, paintings. Gallery paintings and commissions. So this is a little different than illustration, but she's also, her stuff is also illustration like, and so I think it really fits in here. So she had a woman commission a painting from her. Now she also had this painting, cause I read through the story, commissioned through a gallery. So she told me she wanted an abstract scene based on a photo of hers with figures representing her and her spouse. She was very familiar with my work and enthusiastic about the commission. I made the painting for her and met her at my gallery. She said she loved the painting, hugged it, paid the rest of her commission fee, told me all about other commissions she wanted me to do in the future, took the painting home. The next day she called the gallery and told them, after talking to her kids, she actually didn't like the painting and wanted her money back. Her kids convinced her that the painting wasn't what she wanted. The gallery asked me to call her. They handled the commission, and when I did, she said she just really didn't like it and after all and wanted her money back. By this point, she was just like, screw it, fine, whatever. I went to the gallery to return my portion of the commission fee. The gallery told me to keep it. The client hadn't come by the gallery to collect her refund. The gallery told her that it's not the way commissions work. She said she didn't care. Finally, instead of fighting with her, they said they would refund half of the fee as the deposit was non-refundable. She took it. They said, where's the painting? And she said, I didn't bring it. The client came to the gallery expecting a full refund without the artwork, which would have been worthless to me anyway, as it was a custom piece. She ended up getting half the fee back, the gallery's portion, and kept the artwork.
Wow.
I know, right? If you're listening on the podcast, Lee's making a face right now.
That makes absolutely no sense.
I don't understand how
the gallery
they got away with that.
Right, because the gallery really – that's the gallery's fault. They really should have said, no painting, no money. Bring the painting. You get half the fee.
Yeah.
You
know? Well, they should have said all sales final. Like,
yeah,
that should be a big sign at the on the door of the gallery, all sales final, be sure you really want this before you give us money.
Do you think that they worry about like Yelp and like reviews online and stuff? And like, it's like, is that why they would give her, you know, their portion of the feedback rather than, you know, just like not hassle with it and just.
Who knows? This day and age, negative feedback can really do a number on your business. But what about the feedback of the artist community? And nobody wants to sell their paintings through you because, because your business is, your business practices are messed up.
Mm-hmm. So, in your opinion, what's the fair way to resolve a problem like that? Is there a fair way?
I mean, I think this is me, and I'm not in the commission world, but I would think that that's kind of the risk you take on as a client. If you hire someone to do an original commission, you're basically parting with that money and trusting based on their portfolio that you're going to take what they give you. Now, I don't know. What do you guys think?
Well, I mean, if you take that into the realm of publishing, like there's always that clause that says they reserve the right to reject anything if they don't like it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
This is actually a reason why I don't do commissions. I get asked to do commissions at comic conventions all the time. And I don't like how I second guess myself when I'm doing something for someone else who's not an art director, who's not experienced in how art's created. And so I just always turn them down. And I got asked to do some the other day, four different pieces. And my assistant thought it was decent money. And I'm trying to tell him, no, I need four times that if I was ever going to consider this, based on assuming that the project is going to kind of go sideways a little bit. So even if it goes sideways, I get paid. That's my, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. And the client's never going to want to pay that much. So I just say no.
It's dangerous to take on commissions, especially from people who aren't used to art directing. Right. And understand, because they might not know what they really want until they see something and they change their mind, and it's a mess. I've agreed to do a few commissions in my career as just fine art paintings, and every time I always take half up front, and every time I've just returned the money and said I don't want to do the commission.
Wow.
Huh. And that's without even getting into it with them. There's no problem or anything. I'm just like, this doesn't feel, all of a sudden it doesn't feel fun anymore. It feels like a different job.
Stupid.
Right.
They don't ask you, hey, I want a really nice painting and I want it to be a nautical theme, or I want it to be like, leave it wide open so that you can just create.
Right. Work your magic within, give you just a ballpark kind of idea, like something with the woods on it, or
with a hot air balloon or something.
Right. You know? Right. That would be different, but it's always like, I need a hot air balloon and my kid is in it and she's wearing green because that's her favorite shirt.
Looks like my kid and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, here's a picture of our old dog who passed away. Put him in there somewhere. And no, not doing that.
I will do commissions at conventions. In fact, that's maybe the last few years, that's outside of a couple of rare cases. All my commissions have been at conventions. And typically what it is, they know my style. They know how I work, and I'll have 10 slots open because that's all the time I have to do. And someone will be like, well, I really want Spider-Man, or I want robot Hellboy, or I want, someone loved pugs one time. So I drew a robot pug for them. Right. That's kind of the thing I've been doing for commissions, is a robot version of whatever their fandom is, whatever they're a fan of.
Okay.
But the thing is it's kind of low risk, kind of low reward. These things are only a couple $100. It only takes me an hour to do one. If they don't like it, we can negotiate whether or not they pay less, or I just go and sell that piece on my website or something like that. So it's like the best way for me to do commissions, but I don't normally take on like a 40-hour painting type of commission that involves don't want to do anything that involves like a likeness of somebody.
Yeah.
someone's kids,
right.
Someone's dog, things like that.
Yeah.
I always think it's funny when people ask me to do a likeness. I'm like, have you seen anything? I'm barely drawing stick figures at this point. It's fairly recognizable as a human form. And then they're telling me to draw their kid.
Well, what they do is they look at your portfolio and they go, I love your work. I want you to do something not like your work at all. Right?
Can you decorate a cake for me?
No, this is something I've been thinking about, though. There is, I think, outside of visual artists, I think your average person isn't visually literate.
Yeah.
Right? And what it is, it's like, you guys, I don't know if you guys do this, but I know a lot of artists do this. You can walk into a room, sit down, talk to some people, maybe it's a restaurant or something like that, leave. And then if I were to ask you, describe the room to me, you might be able to point out, oh, well, it had, you know, air conditioning was exposed in the ceiling. It was like a brick wall over here. There was two or three paintings on this side and they mm-hmm. were, you know, kind of this muted color. And like you pay attention and you can kind of just tell what is going on visually around you. And I think there's a lot of people that are using their eyes just for like navigation and just like, oh, there's a person there. I recognize that person. And so they don't understand like your style doesn't reflect the thing that they want. And if you could maybe even see into their brain, they wouldn't be able to visually put together what they're imagining,
right.
You know, what they're wanting. Right.
Yeah. It's the same.
Maybe I'm just blowing smoke.
No, it's the same people that say, I think I saw one of your illustrations the other day just because they saw an illustration and they know that mm-hmm. you illustrate. So it had to be yours. Mm-hmm. It didn't look anything like it at all. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Okay. What's the next one?
Okay. Next we got Mark Carman. I once did a job where I was designing baby room stuff, you know, lampshades, blankets, mobiles, crib bumpers, etc. Job was for $1,000. I sent the client the first half of the designs as a low res image with a watermark. Once I received payment, I got the first $500. Well, I got too comfortable and just sent the second half without the watermark and never got the second $500, never signed a contract. So couldn't really do anything about it. But from that time, I always send a low res watermarked image. So this is kind of that classic, get your hand on the thing when you're handing off something, right? You know, you're going to mm-hmm. trade something with someone. Let me get my hand on your product or the object, and then you can get your hand on the money, and we'll pull at the same time. But it never mm-hmm. works. Someone has to trust in no matter what, right? Like,
well, yeah. Well, there is what's kind of neat nowadays. I've seen a couple of like apps or online services or something like that where it's kind of like an arbiter. Is that the word?
Escrow.
Oh, no. So it's like an escrow.
Escrow.
Yeah. Where it's like they give the money and then the money's sitting there. So they don't have the money. And then you do the work. So the work is sitting there. They don't have the work. And then both people have to sign off that they're getting what they are wanting. And then it's exchanged.
That is a fantastic service.
But does the escrow company take the work or does it still stay with the artist?
Well, I think
because I'm like looking for a way to break it, and I'm thinking, okay, so the money goes to the escrow company.
They've got it all figured out. Don't worry.
Don't you worry. Don't worry about the details.
But then you send them a picture of the artwork, going, haha, see, I've got the artwork here, and so then the escrow they say yes, and the escrow company releases the funds, and then the artist never sends the work.
The escrow company would have, I mean, just by nature of what escrow does, would have to have the artwork. Otherwise, they're not an escrow company.
Right, right,
right.
I like the idea. Just trying to throw wrenches in there.
I love that.
But yeah, like there's someone always has to risk. So if you feel really dodgy about a client, make them be the ones at risk. Send half up front before I send you anything, you know. And I've done what Mark's done. I know Mark pretty well and he lives out here and I've done exactly what he's done where you send low res. Cause that's the most safest thing right there. Probably because they can look at the low res and go, yeah, this is exactly what we want. They just can't use it.
I love that.
Yeah. And then, mm-hmm. and then you make sure you get all the money before you release the high res. And that should be the least amount of risk for both parties, because why would an artist create the perfect work that the client loves and not send the high res once they got the money?
Right.
It doesn't make any sense.
I tell you,
because also as an artist too, like, you're not just getting money, but you're also getting exposure through this as well. Like, it's a calling card for future work. Mm-hmm. When people see that, they're like, oh, we want the artist that did that.
Right.
All this stuff with money and exchanging job for money and the awkwardness that is involved there is kind of one of the main reasons I like having an agent. I hate being that person to battle with a client, battle with people who owe you money, and then think that, oh, they're going to hire me again. You know what I mean? It just puts you on such awkward footing, especially even in the early negotiations of how much your, a job is worth. Like, you get a children's book offer or a magazine or whatever cover, and you're negotiating the price. You go in there and play hardball, and you're sort of mean about it, or like, I'm not, you draw your line in the sand. Then all of a sudden you have to work with these people after.
Right.
It's gotten so awkward. I'd rather somebody else do that.
Do you guys treat clients that, you want to work with again differently than clients that you either don't want to work with or assume you probably will never have an opportunity to work with again? Do you treat them differently?
I wouldn't. No, I'm of the mindset that word gets around. Mm-hmm. And so I always try to be as professional as I can be in every situation.
I'm not talking about not trying to burn a few bridges. I'm not talking about that. Maybe I didn't explain it well. Let me explain it differently so I can make you give me the answer that I want you to give me.
Keep spinning it. Keep spinning your yarn.
So basically, let's say you're working for a really powerful pharmaceutical company.
Mm-hmm.
I'm describing a job that I had.
This is sounding very familiar.
And you know that you don't typically work for, when you're doing kind of big money jobs for pharmaceutical companies, you're probably not going to work for them again because it's a one-off project. It's not like they're a publisher. But right. I'll just tell my story. This was a children's book that I did for a pharmaceutical company, basically.
Hold on. Let me give you an answer. Yes, I do treat people differently and companies differently. Okay, go.
For people who I don't want to work for anymore, I just basically answer all their emails with GIFs.
With GIFs. Well, so this one was super complicated. It paid insanely well. It paid $60,000 for this children's book. And it was an internal thing that they gave to kids who had a certain disease to help to get them to choose the medicine from this company over someone else. Mm-hmm. So it was like a brochure/children's book. Like, you're sick, you have this thing, but you can be a superhero. You actually helped me with this one, Jake. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was so complicated. And well, one of the things that happened in that job was it got the revisions became so many, and there were so many people involved and so many hands involved that even the art director was losing track of the revisions that I was sending and that they were requesting. And just with the timing and the tight deadline, and it actually got kind of hostile where they actually lied. There were two art directors that lied and said that they hadn't told me to do something that they had told me to do. And my agent, because my agent was getting all the emails and knew that they were lying. And I told him before I said anything to them, like, they're lying about me to the client.
Oh, geez.
To save face, because one of them went on vacation. One of them took a vacation in the middle. And that's kind of why things kind of got all messed up, because they were AWOL. And my agent at the time was like, hey, you can make a big deal out of this, but it is $60,000. And what if we just humble ourselves? And I'm like, you want me to just agree to this? So I got yelled at by the client, who thought I was incompetent because we were missing our deadline based on the fact that these two art directors. Anyway, So wow. I was pretty frustrated about that, but at the same time, it was a lot of money, and it was like it was going to be done in a week, and just kind of suck it up. And
I always think, like Jake was kind of alluding to, you never know where these people in publishing move all over the place all the time.
Yeah.
And so you always got to assume this person who I might not want to be very nice to might end up, you know, working alongside somebody you're friends with, or the go to another company that you want to work for that you don't have a contact with. So I always try to, you know, maintain that a really good working relationship, even when things are super, super strained. I don't know if you guys have ever had a job that really went south and the client hates you.
Yeah. In this case, they ended up hating me. And it was done. Yeah. And I got paid, and it all turned out good as far as that went. But yeah.
Man, I early in my career, I think I've talked a little bit about this on the podcast before, but early in my career, right when I was out of school, I was offered like a 15 book deal with an educational publisher. And it was more money than I'd ever seen, obviously, as an illustrator. I'm just leaving school. And we were talking six figures. But once I added up how much work was involved in it and the proposed deadlines, I was working traditionally then too, not digitally. Mm-hmm. So there was just no way I was going to be able to pull this off. And it was educational publishing. My whole life would have been educational publishing at that point. I probably could have never gotten out of it because, you know, you'd just be entrenched. That would be all the work that it would be. And so they, you know, mm-hmm. the client had already gone to meeting after meeting after meeting to approve me for this giant, you know, multi-book project. And I came back one day and said, you know, after careful consideration, I was going for trade books. I was like, after, you know, carefully considering this, I don't want to do it. I don't want to do it. I'm backing out of the whole thing. I hadn't signed a contract yet, so that would be a different story. Right. I just said, I don't want to do it. And they were furious. Oh my gosh. She was, I mean, it wasn't even like she was trying to play nice. And the problem with this is I had signed a book deal with them, just a single book deal that was separate from this, that as everybody was, you know, in the honeymoon phase of this, of, you know, all this big book project, we're all like, yeah, go ahead and do that extra book. I'm like, hey, pile it on. This is going to be great. And now I got to do a whole book with this person. And the whole time I'd send them emails and I'd try to act like a pro and act like nothing happened and be nice. Hey, here's some sketches. Hope you like them. Smiley face emoji. And I would get back just like a single word. Okay. That's what the email would say. And it never got past that. It was fun. I mean, 6 months of going back and forth like that, I get single word emails. So then after that, of course, like I said earlier, I kind of thrive on that kind of stuff. So then every email I would write this, just really long, you know, a lot of flourish emails, being super nice. Hey, hope you had a nice weekend. It's really sunny here. You know, just really long emails. They're really, like, really, really social. Really social emails. And then I'd get one word response back.
Oh, that's funny. That's really good.
It was awkward, though. I'll say that.
Okay, I have time for one more.
Yeah, man.
Let's do one more.
I'm just drawing while we're doing this. Now I understand why Jake does this. It's so entertaining to just talk and draw. I normally am not drawing.
You getting some work done too?
Yeah, a bunch. I've filled in this whole room almost. I drew a planetary. Awesome. I drew the worst Saturn you've ever. You'd think Saturn's an easy thing to draw. I drew the worst Saturn of all time.
Well, we'll have to see it afterwards for sure. I'm drawing I'm just doing a couple pages for this October book that I got to get done. Oh,
because I'm podcasting.
Oh.
Is that what we're doing?
Wait, are we recording this?
You're not recording this, are you?
No. I drew a fox playing the piano as well. I thought I did okay on that. Just the easy thing. I'm like, okay, I just got to draw Saturn now, a little hanging planet in this kid's room, and it looks awful.
All right. This last one comes from Cedric Honstadt, another friend on Facebook. Mm. The first time I got a freelance job from a big client, I blew it. It was a popular children's book brand launching a new product, and they called me to do some rush concept sketches over the weekend. I was traveling to a wedding that weekend, but didn't want to pass on the job and lose my big break. So I said yes, wound up doing wedding family stuff all day, then working late at night in the hotel room, bleary-eyed. The artwork didn't turn out well, and I lost the client And the lesson learned was better to say, I'm unavailable, but please call me next time. Have you guys ever run into that?
Wait, say that again? I didn't get the problem.
So basically the gist was on, this is another one where he's confessing it wasn't the client problem, it was his problem. He got a good job that he couldn't pass up. And rather than, because he was busy with going on this wedding for the weekend, and rather than saying no, he just planned to work on it and stay up all night. And then he didn't turn in really good artwork, obviously. And then the client was unhappy and he ended up losing the client, he says.
That is such a dilemma, like a temptation to say yes to something when you deep down you know you can't deliver it, but you don't want to pass this client up. And let me tell you right now, everybody listen to this, they will always come back.
Yeah.
And it may not be them, but they're going to appreciate you being professional and saying, I don't have time for this right now. Please keep me on your contact list. You know, my schedule opens up in 2 months. I'm happy to talk then. And it may not happen in the next 2 months. It may not happen in the next 2 years, but eventually they will appreciate that so much that they'll be interested in working with you again, just because of how you handled that.
Yep.
So it's not worth it. It's not worth it.
You know, someone who, and I've talked about him before, who did that really well, who set a really good example for me, was Brett Hellquist, who I remember early on, he was struggling to get his career started and was turning down work that he didn't have time for. And I was like, how can you turn down anything when you're struggling to get started? And he's like, well, I don't, and to him, in his mindset, it was very matter of fact. Well, I don't have time. What do? You take it when you don't have time? And I'm like, ooh, embarrassingly, ouch. Yes, because I'm afraid not to make the money. And he's like, well, but isn't the quality more important than the money? And I'm like, you're advanced. I'm not. I need.
That's
to
why you're famous.
Yeah. Yeah.
And look where he is.
Yep.
Oh, wow.
All right. Anything you wanted to add to that, Lee?
Nope. Never do that.
All right. All right. Well, that was good, Will. I hope this was like beneficial to people listening. It's so interesting to hear the two sides. Like, it was all my fault, it was all the client's fault. Yeah. And either way, in either one of those situations, like, there's ways to prevent it and there's ways to deal with it afterwards. And hopefully we covered all those bases here.
I gave a story about how things went kind of south on a client with me, and then Will did too. But Jake, you didn't really kind of add a personal failure story here. Should we?
Oh, geez.
Should we get one? Put you on the spot.
Jake doesn't now, fail. At stuff. You know this.
I try to forget those things.
he has will say this, though, to upkeep there.
That's true.
Here's I will say this though. When you're in a situation where the client asks you how much money do you need to do something, don't just wing it. Don't just throw out a number, because if you have no idea and you're not sure and you just throw, the situation, and this is speaking from experience, the situation calls for this. Let me get back to you that I got to do a little bit of homework and I want to give you guys a fair, a fair price, and I will get back to you. And that's respectable. And they're not going to, if they do put you on the spot and say, no, we need to know right now, you don't want to work with them. So avoid that. But if they're cool with it, which most likely they will be, then you go talk to an agent and you get your agent to talk to them. You go talk to, everybody, who's done that kind of stuff. You contact people maybe you don't know who's done that kind of stuff and just ask for their advice. And then you come back with an educated thing, because A, you don't want to ask for less money than you deserve. B, you don't want to be like, well, part of A is you don't want to get taken advantage of. B, you don't want to look a fool, like, oh, this guy doesn't know what he's talking about. And C, there's always room for negotiation and for them to kind of work with you on the level that you establish. So
no, wait, so is it, are you going somewhere with this? Did this happen to you and you botched it?
Yes.
Let's hear that part.
Well, I don't want, I don't, I, it,
I love seeing you squirm.
We'll save that for another day. That's what we'll do.
Oh gosh.
I'm just talking from experience, and we'll save that for another day. All right, you guys have been listening to 3-Point Perspective, the podcast that's been made possible by SBSLearn.com. We're becoming a great illustrator starts. You know, we didn't mention SVSLearn.
Let's make this a podcast where we don't mention it, SVSLearn.com at all. We don't even mention
and we don't
the website
about
where you can get amazing
people can go there and
classes. Yeah,
we're not going to mention our sponsor, who is responsible for this whole thing being out there and all of our lives and awesome videos. Okay.
Okay. Well, if we're not going to do that, then we definitely don't need to talk about what an amazing place the forum
don't
is.
Even do that.
That's totally free. And what a awesome community that is there of artists. One thing that I don't want to talk about is how people post artwork that they want feedback on, and they get all this positive like critiques from the community. It's really cool to see people backing each other up on there and having it be like a safe place for artists, like beginning artists and even, you know, close to professional artists to like share their work. But I don't want to mention any of that.
If we talked about it, people might actually go there.
And then there's a contest they do monthly too. Don't mention that.
No, don't talk about the contest. No. Don't talk about how that contest works.
Because you can have your illustration show up on this podcast's cover.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Anyways, we'll take this out. Your hosts have been Will Terry, Lee White, and Jake Parker. Will Terry can be found on Instagram at Will Terry Art, and also check out his YouTube videos. Lee White can be found on Instagram at Lee White Illo, and you can check out his YouTube videos as well. How many YouTube videos have you done now?
I've done since you've launched? I've done three so far. My fourth one launches tomorrow evening, and that one is on texture, how to play with it, how to control it, and all that. It's super fun.
Very good. And then I'm Jake Parker. I can be found at Jake Parker on Instagram. And I also have YouTube videos, which I haven't done a YouTube video in half a year now. And I'm feeling the itch to start doing that again. So I think 2020 is going to be a YouTube year. We shall see. Our podcast is edited by Alex Sugg. That's Sugg with two G's. And you can find him and hire him to edit podcasts for you at alexsugg.com. And podcast is produced by Tanner Garlick. His website is tannergarlickart.com. And he just handles getting these files to our guide to get them edited, making sure everything's posted and sounds good. And the artwork that we get from the contest winners goes up to where it needs to go and everything's posted. We appreciate all the work that he does. He's really great. He adds show notes and things like that. So thank you, Tanner Garlick. Now, if you like this episode, please share it around, tweet it out, link it to people. How do you link it to people? You could do an Instagram story. You could do an email. You could write it down a post-it note and leave it on someone's monitor in the office. Just share this episode or share another episode from this podcast. That's how word gets out and people know about the information that we have there. Although I get it. I understand if you want to keep this to yourself and you don't want other people having this awesome information that you're getting. I totally get it. I've found podcasts before that I like and I don't want to share because I want to keep it to myself. But you do what you feels best. All right. I'm really going off script here. So let's see. Lastly, the forum that we didn't mention earlier. The forum is a place where this episode has a thread of its own. And if you want to join in on this discussion and share your thoughts on how people could handle the situation better or share some of your problems that you've had with freelance work or whatever kind of work you've been doing. We'd love to hear your thoughts and over there. So do that. And I think that's it. We will see you guys next time. Bye.